Welcome to the Maria Heller Show. On the net since 2000 and still going strong. If you feel like you're not getting the real news, if you feel like you're not connected spiritually, you have found your home. Maria covers a wide range of topics as only a snarky New Yorker can. Straight up, no chaser. No censorship, no corporate sponsors, thus true freedom of speech. Your subscription gives you unlimited access as a member of the smartest audience on earth. Relax and enjoy the education. Now here's Maria.
Good morning, world. Maria here, alive and kicking. Welcome to The Bigger Picture. And believe me, there's a bigger picture going on than the insanity we see on the planet. With my co-host, my friend, a very gifted man, Michael Rakeer. I'm going to pronounce your last name Rakeer. Because rereading some of your latest book, The Spaces Between, Unseen Forces That Shape Your Life, I realize that it's even more important than ever for people to have their Reiki, especially where their vibration is concerned. So good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Maria.
I should have said good morning earlier, but I was already on a tear. You know, I finished reading The Spaces Between, and I love it. I think everybody should read it because people are really unaware that what goes on here is only half the picture of what's going on around us.
Yes, indeed.
You know, when I tell people, you know, humans are at war here, but they don't understand that there's also a war going on, and I'll call it the ethers, for basically the survival of the human race. I don't know how else to say it.
Yes.
And, you know, we look at the world right now, you see fascism going on all around the planet, you know, every country electing madmen, you know, shootings in America, I mean, just crazy things. But nobody really pays attention, I do, to what the earth is doing, you know, between the floods and the water and the melting and the earthquakes. You know, Mother Earth is talking, but nobody's listening.
Yes, Mother Earth is protesting. Mother Earth is saying, I haven't got much time left in which to support you unless you change now. And as you say, we're ignoring the signs.
Well.
Not at the end of things, but we're at a very difficult period. We have to make up our minds what we truly want. Do we want the materialism that is taking us headlong towards disaster? Or do we want to embrace our spiritual side and bring things back to a state of light and harmony? The choice, as always, is ours, but we are ignoring that choice, and we can't ignore it. We have to make a decision. What do we want? Do we want more madness? Do we want more chaos? Or do we want to embrace the rest of the universe? Do we want to embrace the God within? Do we want to embrace our spiritual values? And what do we want to embrace each other, acknowledging that we are each a part of the other? Time for decisions.
Absolutely. You know, my mother, you just remind me of something my mother used to say all the time. You know, here in the United States, they have on our money, in God we trust. And my mother always used to say, yeah, in God we trust till money goes bust.
Yes, indeed.
So when you talk about materialism, you know, the stock market had its worst day of the year yesterday. So I don't know how many billions of dollars were lost by billionaires, but I have no tears for them. But people that think that they can buy their way out of what's coming are greatly mistaken.
And buy their way into the next world. There's not a thought given that as we get older, we are heading in a certain direction, an inevitable direction. And that no matter how much we've got here, you know, it can be piled up under the mattress, it can be in banks, it can be in buildings, but we cannot take that with us. So why the focus on money? Why the focus on materialism, on ravaging a world that can only give so much?
Right.
We have to get our values right.
Right. Well, you know, as an Italian, you'll probably relate to this. You remind me of you when I talk to you, for some reason, my parents always seem to come into my head. But, you know, my Sicilian mother, she used to like pretty things, you know, whether they were crystal bowls or really nice china and stuff like that. So every now and then, of course, whether it was Mother's Day or birthday, whatever, we would buy her those things. But she would never use them. You know, she would put them in the china closet like they were something to adore, but not to use. And I used to tell her, I used to say, Ma, your coffin's going to be pretty crowded with all this stuff that you never use. You can't take it with you. You might as well use it now. I think that a lot of people think that, you know, they, whatever they're doing here, they can take it with them somehow.
Yes. You know, yes, and what can you take?
Nothing.
We would be the first, if we would take something with us, we would be the first humans to ever have done so. In the history of the species.
Exactly. You know, I wanted to share with you, Michael, in case you haven't seen the movie, The Gods of Egypt.
No, I haven't.
I rented it the other night. I mean, it was a good movie, you know, with the gods fighting with each other. Good CGI. But one scene took me immediately to your other book, where they actually, you know, the Egyptians actually thought they could buy their way into the afterlife. And they show it, they depict it really well in the movie, where, you know, they get judged before they can leave the afterlife and move forward on how much gold or whatever they're offering for passage.
Yeah.
And right after that, they showed, I mean, it was just like your book. My mind snapped right to the book. I believe it was Your Life After Death. I'm not sure. But they had a great depiction of that ship that you talked about.
Oh, right, yes.
And people loading on the ship, of course, once they paid their dues. But as soon as I saw that ship, I immediately thought of the ship in your book. It was too bad it was so quick. The way they showed it was so quick, but there was a lot of truth in it. Of course, a lot of hogwash, too.
Yeah, yeah. The liner, of course, one of the constructs that takes people across, helps them to make sense of what is happening to them when they leave this world if they are not conversant with what comes next. It's something to occupy their spiritual mind whilst they rise, as it were, to the vibration that they have become in harmony with because of their past actions during their earthly life. And the liner is one such construct that I've worked on. I don't now, or very rarely, go across on the liner, but I've worked with the spirits who control that particular construct to make sure that people get to where they're going. Yeah, it's very odd to see the top deck of the liner where you have people in pajamas, you have people in bandages, blood-stained bandages, you have people from different cultures, different walks of life, you have people with briefcases, and all these people are nervously sitting on a boat wondering what's happening to them. Mm-hmm. And then the boat takes off across a sea of light, and very quickly they come to a shore. And stood along the edges of that shore, on the beach, are relatives, mothers and fathers and cousins and uncles and aunts. And as they recognize people that they had thought were gone forever, their bandages fall away. Some of them change automatically into spiritual robes, and they become younger. The wrinkles literally fall away, so that when the boat touches down against that foreshore and they disembark, the people on the top deck disembark, they are young again, they are light-filled again. They are delighted to meet people that, as I say, they thought they'd lost forever, but are there waiting for them.
Absolutely. Well, I can tell you, when I saw that ship, I was visualizing myself on it. but it didn't happen. I was like, save me a seat, please. Get me off this crazy planet. But in the meantime, while we're here, you know, our job, as I see it, is not just to record the insanity, but to tell people that they have options and they have to exercise those options now and quickly.
Yes, to push against that insanity and to say there is another way. But it's all down to personal responsibility. No one can do it for us except ourselves. We got ourselves into this at the time of the fall millennia ago. We have to get ourselves out of it according to free will, which is a constant in the universe. We have to do something. We can't shake our fist at the heavens and say, God, sort this out. We can't shake our fist at society and say, sort it out. We have to do something. And the something we have to do is to turn away from materialism and to embrace the light, the source that we have within us, and bring that light out to literally illuminate souls here so that they begin to act in a different way, and the madness decreases and the harmony increases, and this world is turned back into the spiritual sphere it was when it was created by us originally.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, one of the things that I read, I was rereading your book, The Spaces Between. You know, right now, I don't know if you're aware, they want to start up another space race. And they want to put, of course, I'm sure they've already weaponized space and all the space junk we have flying around. And I have always believed that humans should never be allowed off this planet. Wherever they go, they just destroy everything. When I was rereading in your book on page 56, where it says this world is such a contaminated place, but also a quarantined place from the rest of the physical universes, and Earth needs to be quarantined.
It does. We don't want the madness of the fall spreading out. We have contaminated this place, and we have to decontaminate it. And so, you know, we have lots of scenarios of aliens visiting us. But why would they want to visit us? Except as a museum curiosity. Why would they want to visit us?
Right.
We are not galactic citizens in the way that we think and the way that we act. And it's strange that all our, or many of our films about aliens involve invasion or horror or torture, as we brand other life forms with our sins, as it were, with our misguided approach to existence. And it's hilarious, really, to suppose that every other life form out there is as misguided, as violent, as power-seeking, as materialistic as we are.
Exactly.
And so, you know.
Right.
Sorry.
Well, you know, I often tell people, they say to me, you know, so many people have had alien sightings, spaceship sightings, et cetera, et cetera. And they say, why don't they land? And I'm like, are you kidding me?
Absolutely.
I'm like, are you kidding me? We shoot anything that moves. We shoot each other.
Yeah.
And absolutely. The other thing, my feeling has always been, I think that maybe, let's just say, every 100 years, you have this alien race that comes back to check and see, has Earth improved any? Or have people stopped killing each other? And every time they come back, it's worse and worse. So why would they land?
Yes, there is absolutely no reason. I do believe in life across the universe, of course, because everything is alive. Nothing is dead. Everything is part of God construction, angelic construction. So everything is alive. And I've seen in the first book, a few chapters in, Joseph shocked me by bringing in this very tall, slim man and explaining that there is a planet on a different vibration that is very close to the Earth. And he showed me this planet, and it's about 3 times the size of the Earth. And there was a great peace and intelligence and spirituality about this man, and then he just turned and went. And Joseph had brought that person in to say, look, there are beings, there is life on many, many, many planets, but they have no wish to connect with us in our present state. We have to sort ourselves out. We're worse than naughty children. We are little devils in the way that we're acting. And as you say, why would they want to pollute themselves by being connected to us in any way at this time?
Absolutely. Well, you know, ever since I was a little girl, I've always seen another Earth with, you know, people and plants and animals. But it's a high-tech, intelligent, philosophical, spiritual Earth where people are actually using their gifts for good.
Yes.
And I often think that when a species goes extinct here, they're just crossing over to that space.
Well, yes, but we are killing. The estimate that we had from our scientists over here until recently was that we have 12 years in which to put the ecosystem right, or we reach the point of no return. That has been revised recently to 18 months. 18 months. And the calculation is that 40% or just over 40% of our species will disappear if we don't reverse our trends within the next 18 months. That's how serious it is. We are killing off the ecosystem. We are killing off all the co-inhabitants of this earth, and ignoring the signs. Ignoring the signs. We are so close, Maria, as you know.
Oh, I do know. I had a report yesterday, my last news show, a whole group of scientists put together basically the timeline, and they said by 2050, humans would be extinct. I thought it was very optimistic, to tell you the truth.
Yeah. Yeah.
I said, wow, how optimistic are these guys? But, you know, people are so disconnected from nature, and as you and I have discussed in previous shows, religion has given humans the thought that they can just use up everything in nature. They have dominion over it.
But they are superior to everything.
Exactly.
Supposedly.
But dominion in those days meant taking care of. It didn't mean use it all up until there's nothing left.
Yes.
But, you know, when you fall away from nature, as humans have, a lot of humans are afraid of nature. They won't go out in the dark. They won't go into the park. We lost our connection to the Devic kingdom because nature is full of divas.
Absolutely.
So we
lost our compassion too for other life forms on this planet. We have no compassion for the animals and the other life forms that live here in harmony with the planet. And that's a terrible thing to say. We are the dominant species. We can do as we like with life. How dare we?
Exactly. I agree. But, you know, this is the way it is right now, and hopefully people will wake up in time, but 18 months isn't a long way to go. You know, I've always had a feeling of dread around the year 2020.
Yes, yeah. It is certainly wake-up call time. It is certainly wake-up call time. We have to change. We have to remember who we are. We have to spread the light. We have to live in harmony with each other, or we will extinguish ourselves.
Exactly.
The planet will continue. The planet will go into a period of regeneration, and that the planet will be able to come back as it was, as the beautiful sphere that it originally was. But unfortunately, if we haven't considered a life after this life, if we reject a life after this life and have nowhere to go because of our focus on materialism, because of our lack of spiritual knowledge and empathy, then we'll have to come back again.
Exactly.
Certain of us will have to come back again, and we will have to try and put things right again. And the cycle continues and continues and continues until we change our minds, our attitudes, and our approach to each other.
Well, I've got my friends telling me now, never come back, never come back. That's how much I talk about it. You know, when you look at this world, you know, we see what we see, but there's a lot going on in the unseen, or as you would call it, the spaces between. You know, I've been telling people that this world is run by demons. You know, I continually get kicked off social media for posting the word demons. Okay, these people are demons, and you know, I'm on my second 30-day ban on Facebook in 2 months. You know, my Twitter account's been permanently suspended. But I just tell people the truth, you know, and you know, I think even the Bible says the whole world is in the hands of the wicked ones. But people are not paying attention to that. So we'll start out with demons. Are they real?
Yes, they are, according to Joseph, but not in the sense of them being of themselves evil beings. Demons, as a chapter in The Spaces Between explains, are a corruption of devic energy corrupted by us millennia ago in order to carry out psychic attack on ourselves and to be used as spiritual weapons. Now, demons are creations of us corrupting diva activity, diva energy. The demons of themselves are not evil. We are the mistaken ones in having done that in the first place. And you might think, if you listen to this, Michael, that's a lot of nonsense. You have absolutely no evidence of that whatsoever. Well, actually, I do. Because I think we've mentioned this in a previous show, but I don't mind mentioning it again, in that I was once called in to a friend's, and the energies in the house were extremely negative, extremely negative. He and his family had been ill. People around the area were dying with alarming regularity. And we traced the negativity. Three of us went, so there were four of us in total, with the master of the house who'd called us in. In his garage, we found a diva that had been locked into a grid of energy. And couldn't move, couldn't get out of the garage, and the energy lines were taking the energy out of the diva and out of the area. And I didn't know what to do. I'd never come across anything like this in my life before. Fortunately, a spirit guide turned up, somebody I trusted implicitly, and he said, you need to create enough energy to break these bonds, and I want you to join together and to pray. And so we joined together around the diva, joined hands, and prayed and visualized light in the room, and within a few minutes, the tendrils of energy that were holding this wonderful, wonderful spirit prisoner were broken, and the diva disappeared. And the energies instantly came back into that house, and the area calmed down, and people stopped departing this life. Now, I have to admit that I was in tears at that time at what we were capable of doing, because we had created this prison around this wonderful nature spirit for our own ends, and had held that spirit there for countless centuries. And I could sense that there had been a group of humans that had done this hundreds of years ago for their own ends. There is a bright coda to the story, however, in that the spirit returned and gave me psychically this beautiful seed, put it into my hands, and the seed grew into a tree with beautiful gold and silver leaves, and the diva explained that was representative of the way that the Joseph communications would spread. And then she, because it was a predominantly female diva, bent over, because she was far taller than I was, and said one word. And the word brought tears to my eyes, and the word was, thank you.
Wow. It
disappeared.
That's a great story. I know you never told that story on the show
before. Oh, right. I thought so.
No, that's
I'm getting
great
very old. I don't know when I'm repeating myself, Maria.
I understand. But, you know, I've had so many similar experiences, you know, many years ago, maybe 20 years ago. I actually used to do ghost busting. That's what I called it. But there's a lot of places, especially in Arizona and California, that I was called to, because of a lot of weird disturbances, sickness, illness, et cetera, et cetera. And when I went to those homes, it was usually on, you know, where some horrific attack on Native Americans had happened. You know, in California, you know, on top of a graveyard, which, of course, the owners of the house did not know. So, you know, to a lot of people, this stuff may sound crazy. But I've experienced it myself actually all my life since I was a child. I was always in tune with, you know, what was going on, you know, what was going bump in the night. And it was scary when I was a kid.
Because you don't understand it as a child, do you?
No, of course not. I mean, I was terrified. As I grew older and started to have an understanding and being able to work with those energies, when you come against something like that and you announce who and what you are and you do it in a sacred manner, they do respond.
Yes.
But, you know, a lot of times these spirits would tell me what the owner of the house had to do almost as an atonement. And sometimes it was something they had done in a past life that was revisiting them now.
Yes.
It was pretty intense. But I'll tell you what, after a while, I just said, yeah, I don't want to do this anymore. Physically, it was too much. I'm not willing to give my life for that kind of work anymore.
Yeah.
You know, I just tell people, are you Catholic? They say, yeah. I say, call a priest, let that demon jump in him. So I just leave it at that. Your book talks about groups that control these demons.
Yes.
What groups are you talking about?
Well, Joseph didn't explain that in great detail, but he did say that there were ancient groups that have a knowledge spiritually, and I mean spiritually, not in a positive way, but of the spirit, that allowed them to build, to tap into diva activity, to abuse diva activity, to create through their own wishes plus a blend of diva activity and their spiritual energies, what we would call today demons. Mm-hmm. And that those demons still exist, and that they, at some time in the future, will have to be not cleared, but follow their own evolutionary path back into the spiritual realms. So we can't leave these, I want to say, poor creatures really here. We have to acknowledge at some stage, a team will be sent in to acknowledge that they exist and to deal with them and to get them out into the spiritual realms. But it's quite frightening to realize that we've been corrupt for so long, and that we don't only corrupt the physical, the material, we also corrupt the spiritual. And thank goodness, in one sense, it's good that we no longer have that ability or have forgotten that ability. But that's what we used to do. And having created these beings, they still exist here. They had a purpose in that they were sent out to attack psychically or used to demoralize and destructure the powers that be in some country. And are still around. They don't have that purpose now, but there will be small groups who still have that energy, still have that power and intent, and are still working on behalf of the field of human consciousness, which is set to negative.
Right. Well, you know, looking at the book where you talk about these groups, you say these groups used to sit in circles to control areas of the earth. And I do know that a lot of world leaders are very well aware of the occult. And unlike you and I, where we use it for positive, they choose to use it for negative. And then you go on to say that wars and battles are fought on two levels. And you know, that's what a lot of people don't realize. You know, what's going on here? There are some people who are in tune and can hear the war going on in spirit, like in the spaces in between. But very few can. But you do give a good warning where you say that under no circumstances should anyone attempt to directly combat the groups or the demonic forces.
No, it is a specialist operation that needs to happen and is happening with groups of spirits from higher dimensions who are attempting to negate the negativity that is being created. I've seen, as you probably have, Maria, I've seen black circles. Just as I've seen circles of spirits, relatively speaking, above this one that sit for the light, that go all the way up to the Godhead, as it were, and that's a relative term, I've also seen black circles, and that's a shocking thing to see. I've seen spirits in black energy who try to disrupt any spiritual progress here. And so, yes, there is a war of sorts going on. There is a battle between acceptance of the negative and a push for the positive. And we have to turn things on our head so that every day we are working for the positive. We are working for the light. We are acknowledging the light. We are welcoming it into our lives and into the lives of others. We have to start caring again. And not caring about the material, not caring about power, not caring about what we can get out of the earth, but caring for the earth itself, caring for each other, and caring for the flora and fauna of this planet, and realizing that these things are part of ourselves, originally created by ourselves and by the divas as the angelic beings that we really are, but have forgotten.
Exactly. Well, you know, there's that old corny expression, where your attention goes, the energy flows.
Absolutely.
So, you know, I have some people that I know who are like obsessed. I mean, totally obsessed with ETs, with the Loch Ness Monster, you know, the Yeti, this and that. And not only do they have the obsession, but they give themselves a tremendous fear of those things by continually feeding that. And I keep telling them, if you're going to keep putting your attention on this, you're going to attract that to yourself.
Yes.
And then what
and
do
help
you do?
Create it. Help create it. We are creators. Very important point, as you know, Marie. We are creators. Not only does the energy flow to where our attention is focused, but we create that which we believe to be true. That's a very important statement. We create, each of us, that which we believe to be true. So if we believe in chaos, that is what we help to create. If we believe in illness for ourselves, that is what we help to create. We are creative beings. We are angelic beings. That's the way that we function. So if we start to believe in a better world, really believe in it, despite what we see around us now, if we believe in the goodness of people, if we believe in the light that people have at heart, if we believe in the harmony that is ours as spiritual beings, we bring those things into focus instead of the mess that we're bringing into focus at the moment. And we start to turn this world around, and we start to turn thinking around and society around and our perception around. But we have to do it. So whether or not we consciously focus on the negative or the positive, each day we create dependent on what our dominant beliefs are. So it would be a good exercise for people to regularly examine what their beliefs are and think, well, why am I believing that? Why do I believe the world to be this way? Why can't I create the world in another way and believe that? And then we start to change things. We're never, never, we're talking about war on a spiritual level. We are never going to change things on a material level at all. Because what we see here is the coalescing, the solidification of our thoughts on a spiritual level. So the only way we change things, we can change things, is on a spiritual level, by bringing in that light, by visualizing the world we want, by visualizing what we want for ourselves, for others, and for the planet, and sticking to that plan at this very important, crucial point in our history.
Absolutely. Michael, we're going to take a short break. Stay with us. Michael and I will be right back. Hi, Maria here. As you know, I always talk about spirituality being your only ticket out of here. You may or may not be familiar with Usui Reiki, but I have been a Usui Reiki master for almost 30 years. You may also not know that you can come in person and get your Reiki attunements with me anytime you'd like. I've had people fly here, even from another country, to get their Reiki attunements with me. Why? Because they trust me. Reiki is a wonderful thing, and it's the best way to develop your own intuition naturally. You don't need to do anything. The attunements start honing in on your intuition and developing it. It's great for self-healing. It's great for healing others, and it automatically starts to eliminate your karma. I do keep these sessions intimate. I've always taught it one-on-one, and that's the way I will continue to. So if you're interested in that, making a weekend out of it, that would be great. Just send me an email at maria@maria.net and we'll figure out the best time and how to do it. So remember what I always say, we are all here building our next house. Might as well use every tool available to us. Thanks. Okay, welcome back to The Bigger Picture. Today we're talking literally about things that go bump in the night, but they go bump in the daytime too. Anybody awake can see the situation that's happening planet-wide right now. And, you know, Michael, when I started reading your chapter 4 again, guess who's coming to dinner?
Oh, yes.
People don't realize how many, I call them psychic vampires or deadly Klingons, feed off of our energy.
Yes, yes. Yeah, Joseph calls them feeders, but they're exactly the same thing. And I held up a picture of one that I'd drawn at a workshop many years ago and said to people, what do you think this is? And they looked at this strange thing with its tentacles and its roots. And they said, someone shouted from the back, it's a root vegetable. And someone else said it was some kind of fruit or something, when in fact it's what Joseph calls a feeder. It is a semi-sentient or a being of low sentience but it's created out of the negativity of this world via our thoughts that attaches itself in order to continue surviving onto one or more of our chakra points and draws energy from us at a low level of vibration. For a feeder, it is in a feeder's interest to keep us at that low level of vibration. So it will keep us depressed. It will keep us at a low level of energy. It will keep us unhealthy. It will keep us angry. And it does that so that it can absorb the energy that we put out, which is at that point at a similar vibration to its energy, and it continues to exist. And these things are, their only intent is to exist. They are not malevolent as such, but we have created them. And we have to examine ourselves psychically as often as we can, sometimes on a daily basis, and see whether one of these things is attached to one of our chakra points. And if it is, we have to gently grab it, and we have to put enough light into it that it dissipates, that it goes back into the matrix of light, it disappears, and stops having an effect on us. And it's amazing. Sometimes I see these things on people and I say, would you mind? I know this sounds stupid, but you have something attached to you. Would you mind if I took it off on your behalf? And they say, yes. And I take the thing off, and within minutes, whatever they have been suffering from, depression or anger or a feeling of unease or being unwell, disappears because the source of that feeling has been taken away from them.
Exactly. Well, you know, on our last show, we talked about the thought forms that invade our thoughts. But, there are these feeders that also invade, you know, other parts of our bodies as well.
Yes.
So that's, you know, that's good for people to know. You know, when you...
Unseen passages, Maria, aren't they?
Absolutely. And, you know, there are people that believe that this world is controlled by a specific race of people. You know, and some will call it reptilians. Some others believe it might be the Greys. Are all these beings, are they something we create, or are they something from other universes?
I think it's convenient for us to think that the blame for our ills lies elsewhere. We've poured into the field of human consciousness over millennia our dominant thoughts. And if you look at the people that you know, the people out there, the news stories, what are the dominant thoughts? The dominant thoughts are of depression, of chaos, of anger, of violence, of torture, of power seeking. And all those dominant thoughts put out by the people that instigate these circumstances in the field are given power. And we've given them power over countless centuries, power and power and power, by believing in them, by believing the world is in a certain way. And so those thoughts are given sentience, those thoughts come back to link to us, and they are seeking more of the same level of energy in order to maintain themselves and in order for the field of human consciousness to maintain itself in its current state of negativity.
Right. So you talk about embryonic angelic children.
Yes.
Can you explain that?
Yes, that's a vast subject.
Oh. And,
this is not to do with feeders at all. What Joseph is saying is that our dominant thoughts, you see, as the angelic children that we really are, as the angelic beings that we really are, we give birth, as it were, to further angels. We do that in an ideal state away from the earth by allowing parts of ourselves to visit the spheres that we have created, the planets, each of which exists to give the angelic being that we really are an experience, to add to our experiences that we then take back to the Godhead. Now, in the normal course of things, we don't visit a sphere, a planet, as the total angel that we are. We project part of ourselves into that planet, into that matrix of energy, into that experience. Then, as that projection is enjoying that experience, it takes on further sentience until it becomes, although it is still a part of us, an angelic being in its own right. In other words, our children, not through physical means, but through spiritual means. It becomes our child. It becomes an independent, spiritual, angelic being that we have created by projecting a part of ourselves into a sphere in order that we might experience. Now, we still do that here, but we've forgotten that we do that. But we do that partially. We are projecting into this sphere of influence our own essence, projections of ourselves. So we put them out, but because of the effects of the fall, we are not having the experience we're supposed to have here, and those projections become partially formed angelic children, if that makes sense. So we are projecting parts of ourselves out that in the normal course of things, in one of the spiritually enlightened harmonious spheres that exist all over the universe, except here, we would be giving birth, as it were. We would be creating further angelic beings. We can't do that here. We partially project ourselves out. We don't know we're doing it, but we project ourselves out via the dominant experiences that we have. And so we become like a central core, each of us, for aspects of ourselves that we have put the most energy into. So, for example, there will be a child of anger. There will be a child of materialism. There will be a child of pain, because we have concentrated so much into those projections and believe them to be how the world is. So we have to send light out to those children as well, to those partial constructs, and deconstruct the negativity in them. You see, we are terribly trapped. We are really angelic beings that function in a specific way. And that specific way still works on Earth, but in a skewed way. We are not projecting as we should be. We are not experiencing as we should be. And this is all down to the effects of the fall. A decision we took millennia ago that altered the way that creation works here and divorced us from our God memories and our angelic memories. That's a huge subject, but I've tried to shoehorn it into a few sentences.
Well, it was well done. You also talk about psychic tics, psychic vampires, as I call it. And one thing that I know, and it's certainly not because of the fear the media gives us to go out in crowds or whatever, I never have liked being out in large crowds.
No.
I don't like...
It used to terrify me.
Yeah, I don't like... Well, I'm not terrified of it. I just don't like being around that much, how could we say... bastardized energy coming off people.
Yes, chaotic energy. Yeah, energy without purpose except chaos.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, even sitting in a movie theater, I feel like I have to put a strong protection around myself.
Yeah.
I'm out and about, you know, I try to just walk above the rest of the planet. So I'm not affected by everybody walking by me, everybody with their mean face, everybody angry driving. And I know it actually bothers some of my friends that I don't pay attention to what's going on around us when we're doing something, you know, whether it's people, places, things. I'm like, what? Who are you talking about? I didn't even see that person, because I choose to put myself in almost in an altered state to walk among the crowds.
Yes. And you are not adding, by being in that altered state, you are not adding to the chaos. And it is great to pull out of the chaos and decide, make a conscious decision that you're not going to be a part of it. And every person listening to this show can make that decision. That's your way, but it's not my way. My way is different. I'm following the spiritual path. I'm following the angelic path. And I will divorce myself from those surroundings so that I don't add to them. That's at worst, you can divorce yourself. At best, you can contribute to those circumstances changing by actively working daily to place light into the world. You know, at a certain time each day that you're comfortable with, to sit and to bring out energy, because you are an energy source, you are a battery. Bring out that positive energy, that light energy, and stream it out, just as we now stream movies, don't we, on our computers. We can stream outwards, stream out to the world, a movie of a better place, a movie of a better life, a movie of harmony, a movie that refuses to acknowledge the negativity of our world, as you've said, Maria. We don't have to buy into it. And it's the right thing to do. It's not something that should annoy our friends. It's something that they should applaud and seek to follow.
Exactly. Well, I think an easy way, you know, I'm sure listeners want to know, well, how do I do that? I think the easiest way is something I constantly tell everybody. It's just stay fully focused on what it is you're doing.
Yes.
You know, but people are more inclined to pay attention to what other people are doing. And then they want to mimic what other people are doing. And when you're not fully focused on whatever it is you're doing, I don't care if it's hanging laundry, working out, or your job, or whatever, you leave yourself wide open. It's like you have an open door.
Yes, indeed. And there's this, if we consider how many people there are on Earth, and the product of their thoughts, the soup of their thoughts, is floating around between us, and that we are receptive to that, then it's a pretty frightening prospect. We have to be selective in what we choose to be a part of, in the dominant thoughts in our minds, the dominant thoughts in the minds of the collective. What do we want from the collective? We want the best and the highest. What do we want for the collective? We want the best and the highest. We want harmony. We want recognition of the divine within. We want sense, spiritual sense. We want compassion. We want love. And we have to concentrate on those things for some time each day in order to contribute those things to the whole and to swing the balance, to swing the pendulum away from the negativity that it's swinging towards at an alarming rate at the moment.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, people ask me, you know, how can you cover the news and still stay sane? But the truth of the matter is, to me, you know, I see the overview. It's like I'm out of body looking at this planet and what's going on and just, you know, reporting what's going on with a detachment. It sounds attached when I'm saying it because I can't stop my human passion. But the truth of the matter is, you know, to me, it's just like watching a rerun of an old movie. And if you keep your eyes on the prize of how we can do way better than this, how life off this planet is so much better, it makes it a lot more palatable.
Yes.
You know,
but look, we are nobler beings. We are nobler beings. We're stuck in the mire. And we should act more nobly towards ourselves and towards each other. We have to bring back our respect for each other and our acknowledgement that there is only one organism. It doesn't matter whether it's a grey alien or a human being or a cow or a tree, there is only one organism. As we say in one of the chapters in The Spaces Between, God only counts to one. God doesn't segregate. God is the whole. And once we realize that and reconnect to that, then things change.
Right. But, you know, going back to the book, you also talk about suicides, illnesses and suicides. And that in a lot of cases, because we do have, you know, a lot of suicides in the United States, a lot of it is because they're actually affected by these unseen influences around them.
Yes, yes. What is very liberating spiritually and empowering is to realize that the state that you are in mentally, your attitude towards yourself and others, is not necessarily of your own making. And to be able to examine yourself psychically and to remove these tics and to remove these feeders and then to feel the benefit. And to first, if your mood changes, if you become suddenly depressed or suddenly angry, to think, wait a minute, what's happening here?
Mm-hmm.
Not to accept that it's you, but to question and to say, has something attached itself to me? Is there a reason for this? Is there something I can do? And yes, you can. You can get rid of these things. And you'll find that the benefit in doing so. And you'll think, well, it wasn't me. You know, it wasn't me that was so depressed. It wasn't me that was so angry. So it's liberating. And it is worth learning that exercise to distinguish between what are your thoughts, exclusive to you, and what are thoughts that are being donated to you from the field or by something whose interest something that has an interest in keeping you in a negative state.
Exactly. Well, then you get to, you know, drugs and alcohol. You know, earlier you were talking about having seen black energy, black circles. I can tell you that, and I don't know why, to me it's like a new phenomena. Here in the States, what I'm finding is a lot of young men are severe alcoholics. And I'm talking about young men, you know, 18 to 25. Yeah. When I look at them, I can see not only are they gray, but I can see a black shadow behind them. So you have to look at what you call in the book background intent of the people pushing the drugs and alcohol on people.
Yes, yes. And also that there are spirits who have not moved on, but have died to a physical life, and who had took great pleasure in drink, in drugs, in violence. And, for example, with the example of drink, can whisper to somebody, unheard, except on a spiritual level, and say, go on, have a drink. You know you want a drink. Go on. Have a drink. Have another drink. And when the person on earth who is being influenced, unseen and unheard by this spirit on the in the astral, takes a drink, they touch their aura and can almost re-experience the taste and the pleasure that they had in that drink. So again, it is not always that the person on earth has an uncontrollable desire or obsession. That desire or obsession can be controlled by someone who is linking to them from another non-corporeal area of life.
Right. So even when somebody's taking prescription drugs, you know, I'm sure you know that there's an opioid crisis, especially in the United States.
Yes.
And, you know, the makers of these opioids knew they were addictive. And, you know, they overpaid doctors to push these drugs on people. Wouldn't you consider that also a background intent?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it ties into this, I've got to have power. I've got to have money. I've got to control. What power? What money? What control? You are a speck of light that is part of God moving through an area of experience. And once you have had that experience, you will move on from here. What are you going to take? How do you enrich the rest of the universe through your experiences whilst you're on Earth? Do you enrich them by being corrupt? Do you enrich them by seeking power? Do you enrich them by being violent? Do you enrich them by trying to control and manipulate others? Of course you don't. And the unfortunate thing for someone who has lived in that way is that their vibration does not raise whilst they are here, and they have to exist for a time until they have learnt better within a very limited band of vibration, bandwidth of vibration, when they go to the next life. They can't expect to have an exalted life in light and harmony and connection with other wonderful spirits until they have wiped out of their system, erased from their system, the effects of what they've done whilst they were on Earth. It's not judgment from God. They will have placed themselves in a certain vibrational confinement, and they have to get themselves out of it. So, you know, beware if you're a power seeker. Beware if you wish to manipulate people. Beware if you are tied into money to the extent that nothing else exists for you, because change will inevitably come to you, and then you will have to work your way out of the position you put yourself into.
Mm-hmm. Well, why do you think that these feeders tend to look like a slug or an octopus, which I've seen, like a giant octopus all over this planet sucking us all dry?
Yes.
Do you think it's mostly because people think of slugs as, you know, bloodsuckers?
Well, Joseph explains it as them having that particular shape, because that is the most beneficial shape in order for them to accomplish what they ought to accomplish. In other words, with tentacles and with tendrils, they can wrap themselves around the human body, and they can plant those tendrils over the chakra points and draw energy from the chakra points along those tendrils. And I've seen them wrapped around my own body. I've had to take them off. I've seen them wrapped around the bodies of friends, and they sort of cling to you. It's a hug, but it's a terrible hug.
Right.
And that, according to Joseph, is why they form themselves into that shape, because that's the most efficient shape they can have in order to draw energy from the human soul.
Well, I guess now's the time for everybody to, I say it all the time lately on my show, at least the past year or two, that whatever your spiritual program is, you've got to work it not just daily anymore, but a couple of times a day, because the darkness is just amping up.
Yes, and each morning, the first thought shouldn't be, what do I do at work, what do I buy, but I remember that I am a spirit. I remember that I am an angel. I remember that I am responsible for myself. I remember that I intermingle with every other soul on this planet, and that I can make and effect change for the better, and I am going to do something today.
That's great. Well, Michael, that's a perfect note to end today's show on. I want to thank you again for joining me.
Great pleasure, Maria. Fascinating show tonight.
Absolutely. That's not pleasant, but hey, it is what it is. It's the truth.
Yes.
You take good care, and we'll talk again soon.
And you. Take good care of yourself, Maria. Bye-bye now.
Bye now. Michael Rakia, check out his work at josephspeaks.com. This is actually the last book Michael's writing, The Spaces Between, Unseen Forces That Shape Your Life. So we're here, we're there, we're everywhere. But it's not my intention of the show to give you fear, but to help you remember who and what you are. And don't buy in to this illusion, because we're in the final credits of a bad movie. So thanks for supporting the show. I will see you guys tomorrow.
Thank you for listening and supporting The Maria Show. Tell others what you learned today. Knowledge becomes wisdom only when it's shared. Encourage others to subscribe today. www.maria.net. Often imitated, never duplicated. A world of information all in one place. www.maria.net. Always ahead of the curve. Always on your side. Get active or get radioactive. Subscribe today.